Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour on this December the 11th on the West Coast still, or on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. It's now the 12th of December, 12-12. Interesting date. Lots of information to share. I'm presuming that some of the things that I would like to share with you are going to be discussed with tonight's guest before bringing him on. Just want to mention that there's a very interesting video that came out around 9 o'clock this morning, and it's referencing a beefing up of the forces that are being put all around the United States. Evidently, there's a college that has been given a substantial amount of money to go through a high-speed training program for National Guardsmen and ex-military people to be used to quell some major event that's supposed to be occurring pretty soon. This information came from a lady that talked to someone who works for Homeland Security. And it doesn't surprise me that with the corruption that's going on, that these people will do anything they can to divert attention away from themselves. We've been over that a million times. Trust me, it is still going on. Interesting little piece that Keith Olbermann started. Those of you who are Keith Olbermann fans, he's on MSNBC and has done a number of really sarcastic monologues directed towards various people in government, mostly in Washington, D.C. And he ran a series of the top 25 most corrupt politicians. Now, I can't necessarily agree with who is number one, who is number two, on and on. But he covered, I think, the first 12 or so out of a total of 25. So he's going to continue the series tomorrow night, I think, starting with number 13 and working his way all the way up to the top of the list, number one. And that should be pretty interesting. It's very informative. It's reminding us of politicians who have definitely been caught doing something corrupt. I think Richard Nixon was rated number 22. I don't know how they came up with that figure, but there are plenty of corrupt politicians. In fact, I suggest he change the number somewhere to around 535 or so. And just put everybody in there, or as many as you can. I may be a couple of numbers off on the totals, but it really doesn't matter a whole lot. That was a rather interesting piece. And then we have this ongoing saga now of the governor of Illinois being indicted for bribery charges. They claim that there is a list of charges related to people who were in line to become the replacements for Senator Barack Obama's vacant seat. And that, if you haven't heard that news, that seat was being sold anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million. Of course, the governor was to receive that money. Quite a bit of foul language was used in his description of how important the seat is and Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald actually went on the air yesterday and gave off a laundry list of statements made in conversations on a bugged telephone and bugged office. There's a lot to be revealed. Of course, Barack Obama's name came up, and he is appalled. And it's interesting because we discussed the likely fact that he was offered himself a bribe by George W. Bush at the White House. And he's pretending like he's unaware of all this corruption. And I can assure you that that is the furthest thing from the truth. He's quite aware. You don't rise to the position he's risen to in the short amount of time without the qualifications, without the experience, and without the papers to back it up. He's not proven he's an American citizen. We have a constitutional crisis, and there's much more to look at. Now, haven't seen my guest pop up on my screen yet, so I'm wondering, Seth, if you've been able to get a hold of Chris Hinckley. If not, if you could continue trying, that would be nice. In the meantime, until I hear from Seth, I'll keep rolling. We're hearing more about the status of the U.S. auto manufacturers. And there's a lot of common sense coming out from the public. Number one, we have foreign cars being manufactured in the United States. Toyota and Honda happen to be two that are manufactured here. And, of course, they avoid all kinds of tariffs, and the promise is to provide American jobs. And our own American auto manufacturers have taken much of their production overseas. It's been years and years now that all the manufacturers have made certain parts overseas, or the assembly of certain parts, or let's say like in Mexico, for example. And then you have these outfits, and I know this from investigations I did back in the mid-1990s. They were giving out community development loans to companies that were supposedly $250 million holding companies that certainly had the assets to construct a building with the amount of money they had. But they had to have the community do that, and they were going to ship foreign-made auto parts into warehouses in the United States and then undercut the products that are already out there in the auto supply dealerships. This is the type of corruption and the type of insanity that these people do, that they plot. Now, I'm not saying that to import auto parts is necessarily illegal, but it's the manner in which these deals are put together that these people don't have to fork out any money, and they instantly make a killing, and the taxpayers pay for the money, or money that could be directed to repairing our communities is spent on these criminals. I can recall standing before a city council and asking why the company that had $250 million in assets didn't have a telephone, didn't have a main office address. Why it was a family-run business, and if it was a family-run business, why did they have to send someone from outside the family to try to pitch this deal onto a community? And by the time I got finished talking, the guy literally threw all his papers in his satchel and ran out of the council chambers, never to be seen again. These are the types of things that we have to do to stand up to what's going on. We can do this on a local level. You can go to your city council meetings. You can listen to what's being talked about and take into consideration things that you've heard on alternative media and put it to use. The last thing these people want to know is that you see the game that they're playing. And so that is something that that we all can play a part in. It's not up to me to do that for you. You do that in your own community. I'll take care of that in mine. We certainly all make a stand. And I've talked about responsibility and self-empowerment. And if you're capable of doing that, then you will make a dent in your area. And if there's enough of us out there doing it, they won't be able to keep up with it. They really won't. They're supposed to be working for us. They're supposed to have our best interests at heart. Of course, we know quite well that that's not the case. But that doesn't mean that we have to lie down and let them trample all over us. Okay, Seth, if you're hearing me, is there any reason why I don't see my guest up on the screen? And I'm wondering if Seth is even listening to the show right now. Okay, well, if he's not up in a minute, I'm not going to. How's that? We're handling this. This is live radio here, and it's got to roll on. Got plenty of things I can talk about. Now, I've been asked, okay, he's ready. So I just got to move on here. A lot of things to do. I myself am going to be on a show this evening after this show. In fact, I'm going to be on the show of tonight's guest. He hosts a radio show on internet, which is heard on Republic Broadcasting Network Monday through Friday. And the time slot he is on actually begins with mine. And he has been gracious enough to, let's say, play an archive so that he can appear on this show. And at the conclusion of this show, I'm going to hop over to RBN and we're going to continue our conversation there. He is the host of the Road Warrior radio show. He has his own websites, and he's been on the show before. And so I'd like to welcome Mr. Chris Hinckley. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right, you made it. I almost cut you out there.
Good morning. Thanks for the patience.
All right. What's happening these days? I don't know if you got to hear anything I was saying. I kind of talked a little bit about this scandal in Illinois, and just brought up a couple of minor news items. And Keith Olbermann's piece tonight on the most corrupt, the top 25 most corrupt politicians, and just in general, letting people know that they can start participating in the legislative process by going down to their local city council and speaking up, pointing out where they see corruption or where they see something fits into the picture that we've all been painting for the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think that's critical, and that's a great idea. I think it's important to say too, and to preface, I'd like to say I'm not justifying anything or defending anyone, but I think it's important to make the distinction that the mainstream media is doing a great job of character assassination with Rod Blagojevich, and obviously we've seen the same thing. You know, as soon as the dogs are sicked on someone, then it's just off to the races, as we've seen. And I mean, most recently, you know, names like Blagojevich, Spitzer, Larry Craig, Ted Stevens, those kinds of names come to mind. And in Blagojevich's situation, or in his case, obviously all we've heard so far is that he made some statements, and And again, I'm not defending anything, and I certainly don't condone that kind of activity by any means. But, you know, if all we're talking about here is that he had some phone conversations, then why are we allowing the mainstream media to act like judge, jury, and executioner and playing along with it? Worship. So I don't know. I just think it's important to do that, and I like what you said because to me that's the high road. You know, get involved, make sure that we are part of the process. And speaking of that, I was mentioning earlier that with that in mind, what happens if we go to our elected officials wherever we are, whether it's state or federal? And I mean, imagine the conversation if that point were raised and we jumped on the bandwagon next to like a freshman congressman, for example, versus if someone said, oh yeah, you know, that dirtbag Blagojevich, and instead of jumping on the bandwagon, we said, well, you know, I understand there's an investigation maybe that's either has been conducted or is being conducted, but I still hold to the fundamental American premise that you're innocent until proven guilty. Imagine what your freshman or otherwise, you know, representative is going to think. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you bring that up. And, of course, I brought up the Blagojevich issue to discuss some of the corruption that's going on. Chicago is the model for court corruption.
Sure.
There are hundreds of judges in Chicago. I mean, it is a conveyor belt of litigation, and the judges there, on the basis of things that I have learned over the past couple of years investigating the court corruption, and I'm not the first one to do that. Sherman Skolnick did that with Operation Greylord, which sent, I think, 18 judges went to jail, and more than 80 judges resigned over that fiasco. And nothing has changed. It's still run by organized crime, and the judges are in the pockets of the criminals. And, of course, this has interfaced with government. We are seeing this being done officially, and they know it's going on, and it's being covered up. It's being covered up by law enforcement. It's every aspect of government that's involved in this, and it goes to all the way down to the local level. You're talking about the illegal snatching and then reselling of real estate using public funds to do it. That's in the nutshell. That's what it is. Now, in the case of Patrick Fitzgerald, he has been notified of the criminal activity going on in the courts for quite some time. I heard as early as this evening, around 8 p.m. Eastern time, I was told that Fitzgerald, according to an inside mob informant, Fitzgerald was told, go after anybody you want, just leave CPS alone, or you get a bullet to the head. That's some pretty strong words there.
I know, yeah. I know exactly what you're thinking. I bet you I can read your mind.
Yes. Okay. just read my mind then. I'm sure they have remote viewers out there trying to do that too.
So. I bet I know. I have a suspicion what the name is anyway.
Yes. Yes, of course you do. Okay. Now, this is quite interesting because I can describe exactly what they're doing on several levels, but now I know the names of companies and I know the methods that are used, and several other people around the country know this too. I'm not the only one. There are quite a large number of people who have wakened up to what's going on. Of course, the media blames it on people who are not good American citizens. They're not paying their mortgages, and it's causing the banks to have all this trouble, and therefore we have to bail out the banks. So we have to pay for their poor business judgment and for their illicit business practices. We have to pay for that. I haven't agreed to that, and I know you haven't, and I know there's no one in the listening audience that has. There's no one listening to this later on a podcast that has agreed. So where are all these people who voted for this? And under what pretext? Under the threat of martial law, this was done? Who does that harm? Does that harm the people, or does that harm those in Washington? The fat cats. So I've got a lot to say on that issue, but maybe now is not the moment. But I did want to mention that Fitzgerald himself got a threat to stay away from Child Protective Services, that it's such a big business that they don't dare interfere with it.
You know, just as a brief aside, I must say, you know, when you say that Chicago's a conveyor belt, I agree. Most people probably, when you think of Chicago and conveyor belt, you think of folks that stay in that area. And I think what you mean, just to clarify, is that, you know, that conveyor belt not only cranks out folks in that neighborhood, so to speak, but it also sends them out around the country. And that is at all levels. I mean, that's think tank, that's educational, that's political, you know, it's economic. You know, for example, I'm thinking, I mean, obviously, you know, there are some obvious names. There's Clinton and Obama and, you know, names like that. But I'm thinking of even folks at a local level. Like here we have, for example, a gentleman who's the undersheriff in my local area. Directives roll out from on high, so to speak, down to the local level for the sheriff's department, for example. You have a process, and as you and I know, there are some different organizations involved. You have like the think tanks, you have Congress, you have Department of, you have DHS and FEMA now, you have the state academies, police officer standards and training academies throughout the country. Then you have the educational institutions like the local colleges that usually pick up the training for the post academies. And then you have the local departments, like the sheriff's department and city police. And our undersheriff is from Chicago. He gave a presentation on the expansion proposal for our jail facility locally. The sheriff's department has been pressing hard for years on this issue. They need to expand their revenue base, and believe you me, they're pushing real hard for this program, saying everything short of, and we voted it down a couple of times now, but they're saying everything short of you're going to take this whether you like it or not, basically. And this guy, our undersheriff, like I said, from Chicago, he's the one who introduces himself, and he says, "I have a banking background, and so I tend to look at things from a business perspective." Okay, interesting. But on his own website, he also does consulting, and he works for companies like Blackwater, for example, on a consulting basis, which we also have in our backyard. But anyway, you go down you go to his own website for consulting, go down his resume, and you find out of those six that I mentioned, think tank, Congress, DHS and FEMA, post academies, local education and sheriff's department, he's at least four of six in the massaging process of getting things out to the street, and he openly admits it on his website. So, I mean, is there a conflict of interest possibly in him being plugged into each one of those steps along the way of massaging something to the street level?
Well, it's obvious that his putting those credentials, if you want to call them that, and do we really know that those are true?
Right.
But let's just say they are true. This gives the public the impression that this guy's on the up and up, and he's fighting terrorism, and he's the kind of person that you need to have there in the local community. What I've noticed, Chris, and tell me if you haven't seen this, and I think in a sense you are already answering this question, but maybe to a larger extent, are you noticing that there are people in local government that have migrated from somewhere else?
Absolutely.
Another part of the state, or even from another state, on a pretty consistent basis. Have you seen that?
It's a rhetorical question, right? Just kidding. No, yes, absolutely. Without question. Without question.
Well, it's happening everywhere, okay? And yeah. And I think
I can read your mind on this one, too. Just kidding.
Yeah, well, it's obvious that it's being done because no one knows how to deal with that person. That person shows up, maybe in a position they have some kind of cushy, undersecretary of this or assistant this or that, and they're working for a year or two, and their name gets known out there, and they start they're given the responsibility to convey certain types of information publicly, and people become acclimated to this person, and no one ever realizes, hey, wait a minute. I know everybody in this town. I grew up in this town, and I know all the people who are from here. Who the hell are these people, and where are they coming from?
Okay, so I have another point to add to that. One other thing that you'll notice is that when that happens, usually there's an appointment made, and then that person is elected. So they get appointed on the tail end of who knows what. I mean, it's different things. Someone leaves, there's a scandal, whatever. That person gets appointed, and then following that, like you said, you know, there's this, it's kind of a honeymoon phase, and before the honeymoon wears off, suddenly they're voted in before the hangover wears off too, if you know what I mean.
This is an orchestrated takeover, and I'm sure when they have these governor's conventions or these mayor conventions and they go somewhere and meet with them, that these things are discussed, that probably these things are bought at that time. Yep. And I can say with a certainty that at some point people are being bought and there's a paper trail. There are ways for those with eyes to see and ears to hear, there are ways to recognize what's going on. Now, I can tell you also, and tell the listening audience, of course, that there's a whole new dimension to this thing in terms of specificity as to, in a general way, if there's such a thing. What they're doing with these mortgages, we know, if you've heard me talk about this, and I think I've mentioned this, you may have heard me on Greg Evenson's show talk about this, that public lands, which are a form of collateral, are what are being wagered in derivatives and hedge funds.
Yep.
But more specifically now, and this is some new information, and this is a case that's occurring in Chicago while we speak. Maybe not at this hour, but later on in the day, and in the weeks to come, there's a particular foreclosure that's going down that moved from one financial institution to another financial institution, and it did this without the paperwork. It did it via the wires, or let's say online, via computer systems. In other words, data was transferred from one facility to the next, and that the recipient of that information holds the mortgage, and they immediately move for a foreclosure on the property. In other words, they feel they've gotten as much money as they want to get, and they want to restructure or reintroduce that property into the same market again, which is part of what they're doing. In other words, they create double, triplicate, maybe more versions of the original agreement on one piece of property, right, and sell those contracts. They lump them together in what's called an asset-backed securities trust pool.
Yep.
It's illegal. It falls under the RICO statutes, and so it's very illegal. Then they have what is called a mortgage pass-through certificate. And that is the actual paperwork that the end of the line mortgage holder gets before they move on the foreclosure. I understand that is also illegal. And so they're using this technique to do all this via computers. They're not even taking the time to do the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
So
I believe, don't they call that not even getting a kiss or something like that? There's a term for that or something. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's they don't even send you a postcard with perfume on it, right?
Oh, my goodness.
So, in essence, now, we have another dimension of this, which is becoming clear. Okay? This is really important, folks. The reason I'm pointing this out is because this is probably what happened at Deutsche Bank in Cleveland, when they took 2,000 properties and foreclosed 2,000 properties and tore down 1,000 of those properties, and then three individuals went before a judge in Cleveland, Ohio, and won their case because they didn't have a copy of the paperwork. There was no paperwork to give them, you see. This was just a wire transaction.
Right.
This is one aspect of the money laundering that they do. So, in essence, someone owed money to Deutsche Bank, and Deutsche Bank said, no, now you cough up the property. So they went in and moved in, and then they were going to resell all this property. And in the cases of rundown homes, still they were people's homes. People were living in those homes. They seized the property and tore about 1,000 of those houses down, and it's caused a big stink. Now, you don't hear about it that much in the news, but there is a precedent out there legally. So if anyone listening is in a situation where these banks are trying to foreclose on you, my recommendation would be to stop making your payment and get in touch with attorney Carl Pearson in New York, spelled P-E-R-S-O-N, first name Carl with a C. Carl's been on the show, and he'll be on again in the near future, and we'll probably be talking about this very issue. This is a very interesting piece of information I found.
Can I chime in there too?
Absolutely, yes. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, I've been doing a lot of homework on that too. In fact, I came out of the mortgage industry, and you know, the day that it basically completely ended, in the you know. And I was divorced from it was the day that I woke up and went, and it was like I got hit in the forehead. It was almost like, you know, the boxing glove to the forehead, and I went, I work for organized crime. I literally work for organized crime.
Yeah, I should mention you're in this business. I didn't do that in my introduction, so.
Yeah, and then from there, you know, all of a sudden it's off to the races, and I'm looking at textbooks that literally say, I mean, you start digging through the Coinage Act of 1862, Emergency Banking Relief Act of 33. You start digging through the textbooks, and you find out that, I mean, the textbooks, Macro Econ, the Congressional Record, the Federal Reserve's own documents say that, you know, there's a textbook called Money in Banking, 6th edition. It's a college-level textbook, and it literally mm-hmm. says people are confused about money, banking, and bank deposits. And three persistent confusions respecting deposits. The third is most people suppose that a bank lends the deposits of its customers. In fact, however, no bank ever lends its deposits. And you go, what? So anyway, the point is that, as you and I know, when the person signs, the person who is called the borrower signs on the line that is dotted, so to speak, they are in fact creating the new funds. And the banking or financial institution takes that and has it monetized in the fashion that you were talking about. And in so doing, basically, what you know, using what used to be power of attorney, now they've even change that, and usually it's power of sale or some other tricky, deceptive document. They take your place as the lender of fact, and they say, thanks, we'll take it from here and take the benefit of that. And so the point that I'm getting at is there's a simple process that people can go through, which I'm sure is you know what you're pointing to. And the first step, I'm just trying to help flesh out what you're saying. The first step into realizing the reality of what I'm saying is if someone gets a notice of foreclosure, they'll notice that it says that they're literally foreclosing on themselves as executed by John Doe. And you go, wait a second, does that mean that I'm foreclosing on myself? Yes, you are, because you are the lender and you allowed them to take your position. And so basically you had to consent to foreclosing on yourself for that to happen. So by reversing that process, you can obviously recapture or reclaim your rightful status as the lender. And that should leave people scratching their heads for a while. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. Now, you know, I still see things out there, and I've seen this in mainstream media, or I've seen this, let's say somebody sends you a link to an article and you end up on CNN.com or MSNBC.com or, you know, one of the major news networks, Fox News, or and they're describing the process of how the banks are loaned money by the Federal Reserve. And they were still using this 10% figure, which was real for a long time, but there's I don't know how many years it is. It may be 20 or 30 years since they never even followed that requirement. And what I'm getting at is if you're borrowing $100,000 purchase a home, and you go to the bank and apply for the loan, and they tell you, well, on the basis of your credit, to consummate this deal, you've got to put up 10%. That's what the Federal Reserve requires, that you put up 10%. So you have to come up with $10,000, and you're financing the balance of $90,000. What the Federal Reserve, or they may say 20%, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that. You know, depending on how your credit is, what, in other words, how much they think they can extract from you.
Exactly.
It's just an arbitrary decision. There's really no specific formula that they follow. They tell you that they look at your credit score or your ability to pay and all these things and your payment history. But they don't count all the times your employers fold up business before you get your last paycheck, or bogus bills from the cell phone company, or the gas company, or the telephone, the regular telephone companies, or the power company. They don't tell you disputes you may be having with insurance companies. And I heard such a case this evening. Well, not to go overboard with this. I'm just saying that there might be legitimate reasons why your credit is as such, or maybe you're a victim of identity theft, which is very common. In fact, the very people that claim that they're fighting it are the ones behind it. That's the dichotomy in this whole thing. So the Federal Reserve required that the banks hold 10%. So they would get a minimum of 10% on a down payment. Maybe somebody could squeak by with 15% or as much as 20% to actually make the loan go through. In other words, the bank had to hold those deposits. If they were going to loan out money to purchase a $100,000 home, they would have to have $10,000 cash in the bank, in their vault. Now, that dropped down a year ago to about 2%. Mm-hmm. And on the basis of what's going on right now, there's not even a change of money. It's the paperwork for the deal is going over an internet database and being transferred from one institution to the other. And it's leaving the owner of the home, the mortgagee, is left in the dark. All of a sudden, they're ready to make their next month payment, and they get a foreclosure statement from this other institution. The specific case I'm speaking about, and I'll name these two companies. These are big companies. Equifirst, transferred the money to Wells Fargo. And so Wells Fargo was the institution executing the foreclosure. Now, unbeknownst to the owner of the property or the person that's paying, you know, to live in on this property, this transaction took place and they were notified of a foreclosure and they're fighting it in court. And the good guys score points too. And this is one small individual. This is someone really not even in a position to fight this. But because of someone who's helping on the legal end with the issues that pertain to what has transpired, they've actually got the bank lying in court about how they acquired the property. And it's an illegal system. Remember, I pointed out that it's an asset-backed securities trust pool. Those are illegal. Now, can you imagine if a million people around the country stop and look at what's happening when they receive a foreclosure statement from a bank and in a situation like this where they're amazed at who's got the paperwork now, what this will do to put an end to this finally. But the thing that happens with the average person, and tell me if I'm wrong in this, Chris, jump in anytime. I think what's happening is they're so much in shock that they're going to lose their home and their family's going to be out in the street and that they're willing to do anything just to try to save it. They'll even give them a lot of money and then they'll still end up being foreclosed in many cases.
You know, it's interesting. There was a document circulated at the turn of the 20th century that was loosely referred to as the Banker's Manifesto.
Mm-hmm.
J.P. Morgan was quoted as saying, capital must protect itself in every way. Debts must be collected and loans and mortgages foreclosed as soon as possible. When through a process of law, the common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and more easily governed by the strong arm of the law applied by the central power of leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. This is well known among our principal men now engaged in forming an imperialism of capitalism to govern the world. By dividing the people, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers of the common herd. And so you fast forward to now, and it is an intricate system that basically is extorting property from people. And then you look at the Communist Manifesto and the 10 planks, and the number one plank is basically the abolition of property ownership. It's at the heart of the Communist Manifesto, and the founders knew that. And John Adams, in a letter to Thomas Jefferson, all the perplexities, confusion, and distress in America arise not from defects in their constitution or confederation, nor from want of honor or virtue, so much as the downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. And I would say it's still a central issue. And, you know, we're working on it here diligently, too, with some folks and making some breakthroughs. But, you know, getting to your question, I think that I talk to people every day on this issue because I have a huge plan. I have a grand plan. You know, I've been scheming because we heard that the bailout, a large portion of the funds were supposed to be dedicated to the TARP, the Troubled Asset Relief Program, and these toxic assets, as they call them. So great, I have a plan to literally draw down the inflation in a healthy way that's fiscally responsible and that doesn't injure the economy. And yet, are we hearing about any kinds of those programs? We hear about, you know, bailing out banks and financial institutions so they can run off and have parties and maybe the auto industry, but we're going to give them half of what they need so that we can just make sure that the collapse is complete and final when it happens, but no noise about where they said it was supposed to go. But, you know, back to the person in your question, you know, that was only to say that I'm literally trafficking in this issue every day and talking to people, and it's almost baffling to, I mean, I talked to a guy, for example, who was a mentor of mine in the mortgage industry and said, I can help. You know, this guy has lost his company that he was part owner in, mortgage company, is working at the Zip Trip at night to try to make sure that he doesn't lose his house, and has gone to work at another mortgage company in the meantime during the day. But I said, I can help you. You know, he's obviously in danger of losing the house. And I said, I can help. We can work through this. And we were supposed to meet on Monday. He was sick, I guess. And I haven't heard back from him. And he's a friend of mine from years ago. And so it's baffling. I think your point is well taken. But I think in addition to that, people have been conditioned to be ashamed, not realizing. And the reason that I read those quotes, and there are many, many more, as you and I know, and the founders were very astute on this issue. It's an issue of primary importance. But I think people have been conditioned to believe that, you know, you should be ashamed of yourself and you ought to know better and stuff, even though they don't realize that, you know, for example, people like John Maynard Keynes said that this system we have employs all of the economic forces on the side of destruction, and does it in a way that not one man in a million can deduce. And that's paraphrasing loosely and quickly, but that's what he said. And now we have a society and an economy that's predominated by Keynesian economists, no wonder we're having problems. So that's a little consolation to anyone who's listening, and I hope that people stop sticking their heads in the sand for whatever reason. I mean, it's baffling to me. And,
well,
you know,
you know, when you use the word, well, I'm not saying you necessarily, when one uses the word economist,
yeah,
it implies an education. It implies some special wisdom or a special qualification to do the best thing possible. You know what I'm saying? They always have these economists on the TV talk shows to talk about.
You mean we I guess mentally we presume some kind of fiduciary, you know, obligation or responsibility or something?
No, I'm saying these people are determined to be experts. Someone is an economist. What does an economist do? You have to ask yourself right now, what does an economist do when the economy's failing? What good is what they do if the economy is in the state it's in?
I don't know. Hold on. Let me pull up Jim Cramer's website and I'll, just kidding.
Yeah, you understand what I'm saying. We don't sometimes stop to even ask that kind of question.
That's
you know, it's like when they use the term, well, that's not politically correct to say that. Wait a second, what's correct about politics? They're destroying the country,
you know. Speaking of that, Chicago is a hotbed for these Keynesian economists, and some of them are, you know, one of them in particular is well-loved. I won't mention names, you know, historically, but, you know, anyway, that's not politically correct to say, you know, are you saying that he's a bad guy or that he was? Anyway, you know, Chicago is a hotbed for that coming out of the schools and stuff. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm just making this point in general that we buy into all this stuff, and when I hear the word economist anymore, I mean, what credibility do they have? Or auditor? What credibility does an auditor have? Or a CPA? These people are all experts in making money for someone. Who's on the making side, right? Who's on the low end of the teeter-totter right now?
Yeah.
You know, and when you've got a 500-pound fat man sitting on the teeter-totter and a 98-pound weakling up in the air, there's not a whole lot of they can do to get down except to jump, to fall, you know, and that's just a metaphor for what's going on. how long that teeter-totter is a big question, too. Because the longer it is, the higher up you're going to be and the further you have to fall. So I don't see these people doing anything but for their partners in crime. And this is total criminal activity. This is racketeering is what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's done under the guise of government, just as abuse of force under color of authority. When a police officer tases someone 10 times or even 3 times, when a 50,000 volt electrical shock is enough to stop your heart on the first go around, there's no more recourse. And wow, we're already running out of time here.
I know.
I know we're going to jump over to your show. If you would, Chris, I know you're going to be back again this month, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's always a pleasure. It's an honor and a pleasure. Always.
Well, I want you to give out your websites, and I want to encourage the listening audience to visit Chris's sites, because there's a lot of wonderful information there.
Well, you know, they're all structured for a purpose, and they're a work in progress. The, you know, flagship of the show is Road Warrior Radio, and that's where the archives of the show are carried. There's not much there. I'm working on the content on that one. There's a lot of content at a website that I call jonasgospel.com. Road Warrior Radio is the show, roadwarriorradio.com. jonasgospel.com. JonasGospel.com. That is supposed to be Jonah's gospel, you know, basically telling the troubling story of where we're at, but, you know, hopefully with, you know, Jonah's gospel in mind, so to speak. And Jonah was the reticent messenger who walked through town for one day in Nineveh. Mm-hmm. And in basically his gospel, if you will, was, man, you guys are screwed. All right, peace, I'm out. You know, and they repented, or they, you know, they had a wake-up call. They had a, you know, and so obviously we're all hoping for that. And there's another one that's supposed to be the problem, and the solution is supposed to be over at thatgeneration.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, a work in progress too. But
well, I promised I'd get you back to your show on time, and I'm going to be a guest on your show on republicbroadcasting.org. So we're going to sign off here. Please tune in tomorrow night for scientist, author, inventor, lecturer, teacher Jim Murray, our regular Friday night guest. And if you can, tune in to RBN, and we'll be on there in another 4 minutes or so. Special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, the listening audience. I'll see you all tomorrow night. In the meantime, have a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.